Welcome to the Well One Connection, a podcast from Huron Regional Medical Center. The right care is right here.
Ashley, I am so happy to welcome you back to the podcast again. I am visiting today with Ashley Kernow, a registered dietitian who works with our inpatients here at HRMC.
Hi, Maddie. Happy to be back. So I'm Ashley Kernow. I'm the registered dietitian at HRMC, and then I also see outpatients and do individualized consults at Carr Chiropractic and Intentional Living.
Great. And we are so happy to have you back in the community. You've been involved in a number of things. Just yesterday, you were out at a local business chatting with their employees about the five pillars of nutrition. Happy to have you spread that wellness thought throughout our community. So it's March, and coming up, we have International Women's Day on March 8th. And you and I chatted last time, we should chat about women's health. There are so many women that deal with very different issues, right? And a lot of them come back to their nutrition. Why is women's wellness and essentially nutrition so important?
So I think women's wellness is important because women and men are just vastly different people. Our bodies are wired differently. Everything is different. How our bodies respond to things is different. And one thing that I read recently, probably from a social media post, is that women are not small men. And I think that just was a very important line. So we have to view women in a different light and look at them a little bit differently and how their bodies are different. And then as much as it pains me to say that, like, my husband came up with this little analogy, because it's pretty good and I'd like to say it was mine, but he once said that, actually, you have to realize men are like waffles and women are like a plate of spaghetti. Men being waffles, every single square of their life is separate and it doesn't touch. So work is a square. Life is a family, life is a square, their hobbies is a square, where women are spaghetti and the noodles are all touching, and their life noodle is touching their work noodle and touching their hobby noodle, and it all feeds together. It's just that we have to look at them a little bit differently and treat them a little bit differently.
Yeah, I really like that. I'd never thought of that before, but I can totally see that. And so sometimes, because all of those things are touching, and I think we tend to, obviously women are oftentimes more emotional creatures and go through hormonal changes quite frequently. We talk about hormones. We know that's a part of life, and especially being a woman. How can nutrition affect our hormones, and how does that tie together?
So a big thing that I see with nutrition and how it impacts our hormones is actually under eating. And I know that sometimes can feel weird, because there might be people that are actually struggling with their weight, feeling like they need to lose weight. So it doesn't make sense to think that they would be under eating. They might not see that themselves, but maybe they're under eating certain things. Maybe they're under eating certain things that are going to be helpful with their hormones. And then oftentimes the advice when it comes to, let's just say, the woman that wants to lose weight, but possibly that comes back to their hormones, the advice they still get given is eat less and work out more. And maybe that's not the solution for them. Our body needs, and our hormones need, adequate fat intake, especially because fat is the precursor to, cholesterol is a precursor to make hormones. So we need adequate fat. And then, of course, we need all of the nutrients that we get through fruits, vegetables, protein, all those things to build healthy hormones. And if we are lacking those, we're not getting enough of those things, then we don't have the right material in our body to even make them. One, just two things in particular that are hormonal related conditions that I feel there's a huge connection with the food is PCOS. So polycystic ovarian syndrome it's becoming more prevalent, or I think we're just seeing it more, maybe because women are actually getting that diagnosis now, but it can present in different ways. But unfortunately, the one thing that people view it the most is usually somebody who's struggling with their weight. They might have some of those undesirable, like, high testosterone symptoms, and they might subsequently lose their menstrual cycle. So the advice that gets given to them oftentimes is eat less and work out more, but that's not going to get their periods back. And then endometriosis is another condition that we see quite oftenly with women, and it's very inflammatory. So there are certain foods you can take out of your diet that could improve that. Like, for instance, gluten or dairy might make that endometriosis a little bit worse. So there's things you can definitely do with your food that can have a direct impact on your hormones and those conditions.
But it sounds like it's not one size fits all, because it depends on what maybe symptoms you're experiencing in the first place. Because I think sometimes I know I'm like all open ears for all of the advice, but sometimes that's not the right advice for you. So what can we do today to start managing that? If we are having some of those symptoms, what are some first steps we can take?
Yeah. So I think since hormones is such a buzzword, there is a lot of advice out there. And a lot of people they do, they gravitate to any advice that's given because they want help. They want to feel like they're making a change. And certainly it does not apply to everybody. So I do think that one, just talking with a qualified provider and is knowledgeable in that field can help give more targeted recommendations. So like going back to the how much you eat, that's going to be very variable for what each person needs. So talking with somebody for one with that. But other things that we can do is just analyze those like life factors that we know are impacting our hormones. How much we're eating. We could start with looking at that. What's my intake look like? Am I primarily eating like only carbohydrates? So maybe calorie-wise, you're not overeating, but are you undereating something else? Let's evaluate stress level. Stress has a huge impact on our hormones. Granted, like you're not going to quit your job or get rid of your family, but where are all these stressors coming from? And then also, what are you doing every day to help that? We're acknowledging that there's stress, but are we actively like doing any mindfulness practices, meditation, breathing, yoga, anything to help reduce or modulate how we respond to that stress? And then also evaluate our exercise habits. Are we not exercising at all? Are we over-exercising? Are we only doing one type of exercise? Do we need to make changes there? And then just one thing that I love, like I like to give a food first example all the time that somebody can just do at home and it's not too hard and it can have a positive impact. So there is a process called seed cycling that you can start doing in your diet where the first half of your menstrual cycle, so not all cycles are the same length, but let's just use like a 28 day for example. So your first 14 days, you eat a tablespoon of pumpkin seeds and a tablespoon of flax seeds. You can put them in a smoothie, on a salad, in protein balls. And
just per day.
Per day.
Okay.
Yep, just per day. And then the last half, so the last 14 days, you do sunflower seeds and sesame seeds. And then you just repeat that. So the reason for that is the seeds you eat the first half of your cycle help promote healthy estrogen, which is the hormone that's going to be higher during that time. And then the latter half promotes healthy progesterone. So then it just helps hormone balance. Optimal balance is what it's shooting for. It's not going to try and raise one hormone or lower the other, but maybe make it work more synergistically. So it's just something that you can feel like you can leave here doing tomorrow and have an impact.
Just a subtle change in your life that really that doesn't affect you too much, but has an impact. Are there foods that we're consuming maybe in our lives right now that are known to throw off our hormones or to be disruptors?
If go back to the endometriosis example of that inflammatory foods, and I know that not everyone loves to hear to stop eating gluten, but gluten and dairy both can be very inflammatory. If you have a condition that is characterized by a lot of inflammation, it can make that worse. A lot of the endometriosis patients I work with, we do work to get off gluten. Dairy individually can impact hormones as well. It's not because that animal proteins are bad, but realize that anything that does come from an animal also has hormones because that animal had hormones. Women that have a lot of acne, a lot of times, especially if it's hormonal acne, dairy can be a big component that you could try removing, and that might impact that. And then the other thing is being mindful of your environment, which would encompass food, that there are a lot of toxins that we're exposed to, primarily focusing on like there's estrogens that come from our environment. So if we eat a lot of food that is wrapped in plastic or a lot of food that is exposed more to plastic, heated in plastic, those can impact our hormone levels as well. So usually I'm trying to work with people to reduce their plastic exposure, reduce their toxins. And then there are foods you can increase in your diet, like soy, flaxseed, green tea, mushrooms. Those can all be foods that can help promote healthy hormone balance. And then we don't think about testosterone as being a hormone with women, but can promote balance with the testosterone levels as well.
We're in a society, and I think it's because of the instant gratification we get from everything, right? Mm-hmm. We can get things so quickly. If I'm going to try one of these, if I'm going to try to increase those good foods, and maybe I'm going to try to reduce the foods that may be triggers for me or that may cause that inflammation, how long do I have to do that? Maybe I really love dairy and I want to try it for a while to see if that is going to help, to see if a sustained reduction in dairy is going to help or elimination. How long do I have to do that to get an idea of if that's going to be helpful to me?
So in the world of hormones, we usually say at least 3 months because it does take longer to notice those changes. So usually I encourage people to do it for 3 months or 3 months around that 90-day time frame before they rule something in or rule it out as helpful or not helpful.
Sure. That's good to know because I think sometimes I tried it for a week and nothing changed. So that must not be it.
Yeah.
So that's really helpful. So when we talk about women, I think that hormones are probably when you ask a woman, what's your struggle or what's happening? That's probably number one, right? Mm-hmm. Some of the other things I think that we think about and that I hear a lot from women is about their metabolism. And I think sometimes I might think that, but I don't even really know if we know that it's our metabolism. But first, maybe just explain that. Can you debunk the thoughts about metabolism and really what that does for our bodies?
Yeah, that's a great question. Because I actually, like the group I was talking to yesterday, I got off on a tangent about talking about this too. And so it's so often that you hear women or you hear anyone say, oh, I have a fast metabolism. I have a slow metabolism. And who do you even know what that means when we say that? No, we say it. I can eat food and not gain weight, so I must have a fast metabolism. What that really comes down to is how much muscle mass you have on your body. So every pound of muscle on your body burns 70 calories. So the more muscle you have, the more calories your body burns, the more you can take in and not notice fluctuations with your weight. So as we get older, we naturally lose muscle mass. So therefore, our quote unquote metabolism slows down. So that can be one big thing that we notice of like why those things change. And then certainly our hormone levels do change as we get older. And it's a natural thing that happens, but the suffering from that is completely optional. Like we don't have to just suffer through it. And so maybe what's happening during that time is because those hormones are changing, it's also harder for you to gain muscle mass. So we need to maybe look at some dietary changes to help that become easier, or look at exercise changes we need to make, because maybe the exercise is having a negative impact on our hormones and therefore having a negative impact on how much muscle we are building.
Yeah, all so connected, right? And not as easy to just to say, oh, I have this or I must have this as we think. So when we're talking about our metabolism and gaining that muscle, that's one thing that changes over life, like you just said. So when we're younger, we tend to have more muscle. Is that also something we see in our nutritional needs? Do those change as we go through our stages of life?
Yeah, absolutely. So one thing would be nutritional needs will change if you have less muscle mass, meaning that you don't need as many calories. And that's, I think, why you see people gain weight as they get through like their 40s, 50s, 60s, is life does happen too. And like maybe our exercise habits go by the wayside, or naturally we have some muscle loss. And so maybe our need was 1500 calories, but over time it's become 1300. But if you're still eating 1500 calories, you're going to continue to gain weight. So those things change over time. Then, of course, if we need to build muscle, our protein needs change. Like we probably need more protein. The challenge people have with that is that as we get older, more so probably into our 60s, not so much in our 40s, but as we start to get older into our 60s and 70s, we don't crave protein as much. Your stomach doesn't produce as much stomach acid. It's a little bit harder to digest. We naturally just don't eat as much protein. Then we're going to lose more muscle. So we really have to prioritize that protein piece if we want to think about our healthy metabolisms, aging well, having longevity. We have to think about getting enough protein and what our nutrient needs really are, like how many calories we need every day.
Do you have a general recommendation of how much protein we should be getting as women?
Yes, I do. We'll go through that. One thing before that is that, so because you said it's very individualized, that's very true. Like you could have two people in the same room that both weigh 150 pounds. And if one of those people have 75 pounds of muscle, their quote unquote metabolism is going to be a little bit different than the person that has 50 pounds of muscle. So how we can be more specific with that is through the method of a body composition. So at the clinic, we happen to have a machine that does, I have a machine that weighs you, but measures your muscle mass and body fat mass. And so you're looking more at that muscle mass piece. So then we can be a little bit more specific on that. So then it doesn't apply to everybody, but we can know this applies to you. So we can use that data to gain what's called your BMR, basal metabolic rate. That's how many calories it takes for you to stay as you are every day. And so then to give the recommendations of how much protein does somebody need, more and more research is coming out to say 1 gram of protein per pound of your ideal body weight. So sometimes that might seem like a lot of protein, but we have to realize it's based off of what your ideal is. So if you're overweight, then certainly you don't want to base 1 gram per pound of that, but for most women, if you do the 1 gram per pound of ideal body weight, you're usually looking at anywhere between 105 to 150 grams a day.
Are there some really easy ways or some things that we might not think of that we can sneak more protein into our diet? Mm-hmm.
So I think smoothies and shakes are really helpful because a lot of people maybe don't get their day started on the right foot. So they grab something quick at breakfast time and it usually is not protein rich. because most of our commercialized breakfasts are bars or cereal, which is mostly carbs. So I like a smoothie or a shake in the morning. My encouragement with that is be mindful of what you are grabbing, because unfortunately, a lot of those bottled protein drinks have an ingredient list that's a mile long and it's pretty much all processed. So ideally, I would have people utilize like a functional food powder or a protein powder, and then they make their own smoothie where they could use almond milk or dairy milk if that works for you. And then you can also utilize that as a way to put some different vegetables in there too and really maybe not even notice them. But a super easy way to get like close to probably 30 grams of protein. And if we're thinking 100 grams, if you have roughly 30 grams three times a day, you're pretty darn close to 100 grams. So a functional food is, it's different than a protein powder in regard that it has protein, fats, and carbs. So it can be a whole meal in one thing, whereas like the whey protein is just protein, which is okay depending on what you're looking for. But usually for most just average people, I would push someone towards a functional food because it's going to have vitamins, minerals, and a little bit more to it. And then you can still build your shake around it.
What would you say about getting those, if they're a meat eating person, those meat proteins in their diet?
So I think a lot of people think that if they talk to a dietitian, they're going to tell them to stop eating beef. And I've only ever told somebody that if they were sensitive to beef. So I do usually recommend a variety. If we think about just lunches and suppers, that's 14 meals a week. So just don't have beef for all 14. Usually separating that out into 3 to 4 times a week, you have each of those types of meats, beef, chicken, turkey, pork, fish, and just have a variety. The more, if you can get 1 to 2 servings of fish in a week, that would be really good for heart health, of course. But then the fats you get from fish are also very good for your hormones too. So just 1 to 2 times a week if we can shoot for that. The one thing I would push with fish, and it does make it a little bit hard here in Huron just because of where we're located, we're not located by an ocean, is that you do really want to try to get wild caught or fresh as opposed to farm raised. Just because the nutrients that you're actually going to get from that protein is not going to be quite the same if it was raised in a fish farm as opposed to wild caught.
Okay, that's great to know. That's an important thing that we can look for. There's so much, Ashley. I think we could talk all day about this and about women's health and the things that we should look for and know what to do. I think when you chatted about your 5 pillars, that works for women, but there are so many additional things that are so individualized. And we do have resources here in our community, like yourself at Intentional Living Center. What would you recommend? Go chat with your primary care provider, see what they think, ask them about some of those things, and they may refer to you or to a dietitian. And then people can certainly call you as well out at Car Chiropractic Intentional Living.
Yeah, obviously when it comes to health in general, we always want to work with people's primaries, but especially hormones, because the one thing that, you know, our facility or I cannot do is if there's a structural thing going on where you need an ultrasound or an exam, you want to work with your primary or maybe a gynecologist for that. And then if there's things that, you know, those things check out and they're ruled out, but maybe it's more below the surface or it's more minor tweaks that need to be made here and there, then I feel like it's usually a great fit for us to get connected.
Maybe I'm not struggling with a specific issue. Maybe I feel fairly healthy, but I am heading into my 40s or 50s or 60s or 70s, and I just might need some of that guidance. You're available for that too,
yes,
right?
Yes, absolutely. You don't have to come in with a health condition. You can come in healthy as can be and still just want to learn a little bit more.
There is so much to learn and to get reset of all of the things that we hear out there. So we appreciate your knowledge and sharing, and excited here to celebrate International Women's Day and the wonderful women in our community and here at HRMC.
Yes, thanks.
All right, thanks, Ashley.
Thanks for listening to the Well One Connection. This podcast is informational only and not intended to replace the advice of your healthcare provider. Huron Regional Medical Center, online at huronregional.org.